Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. I'm Dan Peck. Drew, the capable one at the controls. Bill Cameron, this time it's not we're waiting to see what happens. Bill Cameron, we know Bill's whereabouts right now. Bill is on campus at Auburn watching the spring practice window, the football window. We get the first half hour or so at 4 o'clock. Like once a week during spring practice, and I've Bill and I debated who gets to go earlier today, and I went during the fall, so I'm happy to and Bill wants to update the Bill Cameron depth chart, and so we'll get some we should get a dispatch from Bill. I'm thinking during hour number two, maybe he calls in during hour number one. We'll find out. It is a Tuesday show, which means we're going to talk with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, in hour number one. Andy is up in Rocket City for tonight's baseball game, Troy and Auburn. Good Troy team, one of the better, you know, non-power conference teams in college baseball. Sun Belt might be the best non-power conference league in college baseball. Coastal Carolina's in the top 25. You've got a good Old Dominion program. South Alabama has had a lot of success. The Georgia schools are capable of playing well. Texas State has had quality seasons. So yeah, Auburn getting ready for a good midweek opponent and a Troy team that would love to pick up a win over Auburn. You don't get as many playing in the Sun Belt. You don't get as many opportunities against teams like Auburn. And so for a Troy team that would love to punch their ticket to the postseason, it's an important game tonight. So we'll get that one up at the home of the Rocket City Trash Pandas, and that one should be on. We got Wings 94.3, I believe, for that game tonight. So we should have some words with Andy Burcham. I make that sound threatening. We should hear from Andy Burcham. Yeah, I got some things to say to. No, we should hear from Andy Burcham before the first hour is over. And then in hour number two, we're going to talk with Jake Crane from Crane and Company. He'll help us. We'll talk about everything going on in the world of college basketball and some football news, as well as spring games get closer and we get closer and closer to the 2024 season. But college basketball, this is one of the great weeks in college basketball with the conference tournament action, the one-bid leagues. You know, there's desperation. Some of these teams are playing their last game of the season. You know, it's winner stays, loser goes home, you know, quite literally in some of these. And you've got semifinals and finals of leagues trying to send their champion to the NCAA tournament. Selection Sunday coming up on Sunday. The SEC tournament gets started tomorrow. Auburn's first game will be on Friday. We know that Auburn's opponent will be one of South Carolina, Arkansas, or Vanderbilt. Arkansas and Vanderbilt play tomorrow. The winner of that game gets the Gamecocks on Thursday. Winner of that game plays Auburn on Friday. If I had to predict right now, I've been doubting South Carolina all season long. I'm a little bit, you know, I mean, they're 25-6. I saw an interesting debate earlier today about South Carolina as an NCAA team and whether or not, because some of the metrics, South Carolina did not play a difficult non-conference schedule aside from the game at Clemson. The rest of the games don't really move the needle for an NCAA tournament team. South Carolina, I think, they're in the high 40s in net ranking. They're right on the between 45 and 50 is where they are right now, and that would tell, that profiles as an 8 seed or a 9 seed in the NCAAs, but a lot of South Carolina's other metrics and a lot of the human folks predicting where the bracket's going to fall, they've got South Carolina on the 5 line or the 6 line. So there's a there's a disconnect between how some of the certainly how the human voters in the human polls and some of the folks predicting the bracket versus what the metrics and what the what some of the computer polls were to say about a team like South Carolina. But South Carolina could pick up some quality wins in Nashville this weekend, and that would help their case to have a stronger seed in the NCAAs. As it stands now, you've got Tennessee, Auburn, Alabama, Kentucky, Florida, South Carolina, and I think that's pretty much. I mean, Mississippi State has played their way in. I've seen some folks who think A&M is very close. I saw a bracket projection earlier today that had A&M in the play-in game. So maybe A&M's in stronger. They're a team where there are some folks predicting the bracket who don't have A&M anywhere close to the bubble. Like don't have have 8-10 teams closer to the play-in game than Texas A&M. There are other or at least maybe not 8-10, but have A&M. They're behind several teams to make it as an at-large. There are other polls that have there are other projections that have A&M much closer to the cut line or even in the tournament as we go into the SEC. I'd be surprised if A&M were to lose their first game in Nashville. I would be very surprised if they were selected as an at-large for the NCAA tournament. But they have an interesting case because of the strength of the teams they played in SEC play. And some of the games they played in non-conference. I mean, A&M's a because the overall win loss record is not impressive. The conference win loss record is not impressive. Some of the underlying metrics for A&M suggest that they might actually be a tournament team. And based on what I've seen from Texas A&M, if they were to get in, I believe they could be a dangerous matchup. They're a team that has been competitive with some top teams in the SEC. They've also had some very underwhelming performances, but that's the bubble for the SEC, A&M, Mississippi State. I mean, Mississippi State is pretty in pretty good position. I think it would be a surprise to see Mississippi State left out of the field with their current resume, even if they lost their first game in Nashville. I think Texas A&M has work to do, but what we're seeing, I mean, that could be what that means is maybe they just need one win. Maybe they need a couple of them. We saw a Texas A&M team 2 years ago that went all the way to the finals and got left out of the NCAA tournament. This team maybe has a stronger bubble case than that one did. But Texas A&M would be the closest thing to a bubble team for the SEC right now if you look at Mississippi State and you think that they're safe. Arkansas is not a bubble team. Ole Miss has played their way off the bubble, too, over the last month or so. Arkansas is not a bubble team, but they have the talent of, especially based on how people viewed them going into the season or going into SEC play. Arkansas maybe has the talent of an NCAA tournament team. The question is, are they going to be able to do it? I mean, Arkansas would need to win the SEC tournament. They're not getting in as an at-large because they've lost too many games. Can they do it? I mean, they are, of the teams outside the top eight, I would say Arkansas has got the best, of the teams outside the top eight seeds in the SEC, I would say Arkansas maybe has the best chance to make the, to make a real run in Nashville, and they're talented enough, and they've played some really competitive games against the top teams in the league. But it's for a team playing on Wednesday to go, all the way, that's a tall order. That's a lot of basketball in a short amount of time. So yeah, let me see if I can. I'll work on the odds for the SEC tournament going into tomorrow because we'll see what we can do. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. Dan Peck in the studio, Drew at the controls. We'll hear from Bill Cameron. We'll hear from Andy Burcham a little bit later on. That phone number brought to you by our friends at the that's the Skybar Hotline. So you can call us up on the Drive Hotline presented by our friends at Skybar. 334-321-1390. You can also text us 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast available. However you listen to podcasts, go to your favorite podcasting platform, search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. That's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Want to point out, if you missed any of yesterday's show, the second hour we were joined by Cooper McMurray, Auburn baseball first baseman, Cooper McMurray. He's going to be our Tiger Takes guest for the season this year. We've gotten extremely lucky with some really fun and engaging and insightful athletes to do the Tiger Takes deal over the last few years. John Samuel Schenker and Zepp Jasper and Sonny DeShera. Like we've had some really good ones, and Dylan Cardwell has been great this year. Hope to talk to Dylan on Thursday before Auburn plays in the SEC tournament on Friday. But if you missed Cooper McMurray yesterday, you can check that out on the podcast. Go to ESPNAU.com or search podcast and find the Drive with Bill Cameron. Cool stuff from Cooper about his hot start to the season. SEC play starting this weekend for the it's a big Nashville weekend for Auburn. You got the SEC tournament. You've got Auburn baseball at Vanderbilt. We'll see if I think we talked to Andy Burcham about the possibility of him playing double duty. There's also gymnastics going on in Nashville this weekend too. The Auburn gymnastics team headed up there, so a busy weekend. It's gonna be a busy weekend here in Auburn because you know everybody's back in town after spring break. But also gonna be a pretty busy weekend in Nashville with the Auburn Tigers in multiple sports competing in Music City. Also St. Patrick's Day on Sunday. I don't know if the St. Patrick's Day festivities change at all. Is it like Halloween? Do you move it to a different day? Is Friday night officially St. Pat? I don't know how you celebrate. You know, I feel like a Sunday might throw off the people still need to be at work the next day. Yeah, well, you know, we'll see. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. Again, we'll talk with Bill Cameron at some point between now and the end of the show. He is watching football practice right now, and he'll tell us about everything that that he was able to see. Heard from some football players earlier today. We went and had a media session with a couple of the guys on this year's team. Heard some really interesting stuff from Jalen McLeod about what's different, and you know, I was curious about sort of who's stepped up as a leader with the departures from last year's team. A lot of the most vocal leaders from last year's team have moved on and are you know, either in the NFL draft or have switched teams. And so hearing from Jalen McLeod about which guys from last year's team and which of the newcomers have sort of assumed a leadership role on defense was interesting stuff. Among the other things, his decision to come back versus going pro, what he feels like he needs to work on as a player. So some cool stuff from Jalen McLeod. If there's time, we will run a little bit of that for you. But I'd love to hear from you as well as we get closer to the start of the SEC tournament, Selection Sunday, Portal Monday, which of course is it's not quite the fan event that Selection Sunday is with the brackets and everything, but a huge day in college basketball. If you don't know what I'm talking about, the Monday after Selection Sunday, so a week from yesterday, 6 days from now, the transfer portal officially opens up for players in college basketball who want to switch teams, who don't have early entry to the portal because of a coaching change or because they're graduate transfers. So I would expect, you know, it's not even, we wondered if it was going to be a fad at first. It's not. There is going to be a lot of turnover in college basketball. There's going to be a lot of movement, a lot of activity in the transfer portal. Players who are, you know, looking to find more playing time, players who are looking to jump up in competition, players who there's a list of reasons why guys could decide to go into the transfer portal. But I would expect to see a lot of names and familiar names for folks who follow college basketball around the transfer portal this upcoming offseason. Curious to see. I mean, Bruce Pearl's got a lot of basketball between now and whenever Auburn's season ends, but curious to see who decides to stick around and who doesn't from this Auburn team. That certainly impacts what Bruce Pearl and his coaching staff need to go find in the transfer portal. But based on the last couple of seasons, based on the way they've gone out and gotten players like, I mean, there's an argument to be made that Bruce Pearl, I don't want to, you know, I'll ask Jake about this because he follows some of the other coaches very closely too, but I would think Bruce Pearl has done as good a job in the transfer portal of finding impact players as anyone else in major college basketball. Musselman has had some some very impactful additions to his team. But you think about like who's joined the team via transfer for Bruce Pearl, whether it's Samir Dowdy or Walker Kessler or Denver Jones, Wendell Green, Zepp Jasper, Jani Broome. Like there are a lot of really key players on recent Auburn teams that started their college basketball career somewhere else and then found their way to Auburn. So I would think Bruce Pearl is up for the challenge of the transfer portal opening on Monday, and he's done he's done an excellent job thus far of navigating that portal and finding players who fit what he's trying to do at Auburn, and that's something to watch for. It's got to be, and I think it's probably the right policy to open the transfer portal while the postseason is going on. I know some people think that it puts the teams that advance deep into the postseason at a real disadvantage compared to everybody else. But you know, they also get to recruit knowing that they just went to the Final Four, or they get to recruit off that outstanding postseason run. I sort of understand why. Yeah, let's give a leg up to the teams that did not make the postseason by letting them start their recruiting. Not that the teams that are in the postseason can't recruit as well, but they've got games to worry about. If you've got a win or go home game on Thursday, how much are you truly focused on recruiting compared to some of the teams that know their season is over starting Monday, and they've got to start replenishing the roster and making whatever moves are necessary. So yeah, transfer portal Monday coming up the day after Selection Sunday. Can't wait to see the bracket as we get closer to the weekend and all of the all of the different. I mean, this is a year with a huge bubble. Like there are a lot of teams where you can sort of make the case, especially mid-majors, that you can make the case they deserve inclusion depending on what the committee is prioritizing. And so, yeah, it's tough to predict what the bubble is going to look like, and there could be a surprise or two with so many teams vying for so few spots. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. We've got Andy Burcham coming up in just a couple of minutes. Bill Cameron will be joining the show as well. Stick around. You are listening to the Tuesday edition of The Drive.
Chandler here.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Hour number one of the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Bill Cameron will join us. He was watching Auburn football practice as part of the media viewing window when the show started, but he will join us before the show is over. And it's Tuesday, which means in hour number one.
Taking its batting practice, and this ballpark is in outstanding shape. They're, I guess, about a month away from the start of their season, but this playing surface here is fabulous.
I've heard nothing but good things about the home of the trash pan. Is this your first visit in a while to that?
No, I've never been to this game, the Auburn game, but I came the first season. We have family up here, and we came the first season the Trash Pandas played here. We came to just one of their games on a summer night, and fabulous setting. And this, just for background, I mean, this area around this stadium has just exploded with housing and restaurants, and there's plenty of parking here, which seems to be the last thing people think of when they build.
In the coaches poll, one of 10 SEC teams ranked in college baseball as we approach conference play. You know, Auburn's got a big test this weekend with Vanderbilt, but this is a game for a Sun Belt team, and the Sun Belt a quality league in college baseball. For a Sun Belt team that doesn't get all that many opportunities against power conference opponents, I would expect Auburn to get Troy's best shot tonight.
I don't think there's any question about that. They will get Troy's best shot, and I think vice versa. I mean, Troy came to Auburn and beat the Tigers a year ago at Plainsman Park in a midweek game. And this game between Auburn and Troy, whether it's played in Auburn, whether it's in Montgomery, whether it's in Troy, is always hotly contested. Of course, Troy has a former Auburn Tiger, Mikey Bello, an outfielder that played for the Tigers, now starting tonight for Troy. So there's a little bit of that in this game tonight. Two really good starting pitchers. Connor McBride for Auburn, who's 2-0, and then Garrett Gaines for Troy, who's 1-0 with a 1.69 ERA. These are not your typical midweek numbers for starting pitchers in a game like this one.
Well, we were talking about the Garrett Gaines story a little bit on yesterday's show, and this guy was one of the best Friday starters in the Sun Belt in the 2022 season, missed last year with an injury, and is working his way back and has started a promising start to his comeback season.
Now, Skyler Meade is the head coach for Troy, and he is known for pitching. I mean, that is his forte. So I'm not surprised to see that this Troy team can pitch it and pitch it well. And it's going to be interesting to see how this game plays out. Auburn will not have two of its starters tonight because of illness. Bobby Pierce is here, but is not playing tonight. And Auburn will not have Cooper Weiss in the lineup tonight because of illness that's kind of been going through the ball team for the last week and a half or so. So that's two differences in the Auburn lineup going into this one tonight against Troy.
New Coop, as we learned yesterday from because there's multiple Coopers. Cooper McMurray has never been on a team with another Cooper before, so it's caused some confusion. We've learned that there's a new Coop is how folks are describing the Cooper who will not be playing tonight. Also, and let's welcome in Bill Cameron. Here as Bill's Skyping in from he was at the viewing window earlier today, but Bill's been watching the baseball team very closely as conference play approaches. Bill, you there?
Yeah, Andy, there may be another connection you guys might check. I mean, when we looked at Garrett Gaines yesterday, he's also from Cairo, Georgia, the hometown of Trey Gaines, the former Auburn football and baseball star. So, I mean, he may well, I would think most likely, is related to a former Auburn star dual sport athlete. So that's something to check on for tonight.
We did some digging on that because Jason Caldwell called me earlier in the day asking the same question. So I posed the question to Barry McKnight, and he says they are no relation.
Huh. That must just be a common name around the syrup makers.
Perhaps it is. I'm not certain.
Yeah, well, hey, tough not to have both Connor and Bobby. Bobby has been out. Didn't play. Did he even play in the series? I know he didn't play Saturday or Sunday.
He played Friday, but he wasn't even at the ballpark Saturday or Sunday. I mean,
right.
whatever's been going around Auburn has been going through this team. And it caught up with Bobby, and he'll miss his third straight game. And I don't know if it's the same thing. It's going to keep Cooper Weiss out of the lineup tonight, or the new Cooper. Is that what you called it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, Cooper McMurray said they either call him New Coop or Little Coop because he's
new
either
Coop.
Old
okay,
Coop or yeah. Big Coop.
That will apparently keep New Coop out of the lineup tonight.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I thought Sunday, Sunday was really big for Auburn after that just awful performance on Saturday that Butch Thompson said after the game, probably the worst game he's been around as an Auburn head coach. And things didn't get off to a great start with an error and a homer right there off the bat. But, man, the Auburn bats came back with a vengeance, really, and sent Austin Peay away, with that run rule impressive win. They've really been swinging the bats well.
I think this team's power has surprised folks. And maybe this coaching staff right now. I mean, this team has had, it's had home runs in every game this season. It's had multiple home runs in, the last seven or eight games. Now, listen, that's non-conference opponents, and you're getting Vanderbilt starting Friday night in Nashville. If that continues through this weekend with Vandy and tonight here against Troy, then perhaps this Auburn team has some legitimate power that you really didn't see other than perhaps Cooper McMurray and Ike Irish, and to a certain extent, Bobby Pierce coming back. But they're getting power up and down the lineup, and it's not just home runs. I mean, Sunday in the 10-run rule, well, it was more than 10 runs. On Sunday, it was not just home runs. It was doubles aplenty for the Tigers on Sunday. And that has always been the mark of an Auburn baseball team, all the way back to the Hal Baird days. Auburn finds the gap, finds the corner. It's a terrific doubles team. Well, not only did Auburn get those doubles, but those home runs on Sunday as well.
Auburn victorious by TKO on Sunday after building that big lead, and now they've got Troy before Vanderbilt welcomes Auburn to Nashville on Friday. We want to get some basketball talk in, but I think this is the only appropriate time I can ask. Hey, Andy, in light of the Best Picture winner, any interest in calling opposite field home runs Oppenheimers from now on?
No, I did see Oppenheimer though.
Oh, what'd you think?
And I thought it was very good. I thought it was a terrific movie. I thought it was well acted. But no, I'm not going to do the Oppenheimer for an opposite field home.
All right. Well, you know, I'll call Barry and see if he.
Well, you know what? I mean, he's certainly available to do that.
All right. Cool. I'll check with Barry. We're talking with Andy Burcham, the voice of the Auburn Tigers. Andy, can you hang on and talk some basketball with us? All right. Cool.
Sure.
We'll do that. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Andy Burcham to talk some Auburn basketball as the Tigers go to Nashville for the SEC tournament this weekend. Stick around. You are listening to the Tuesday edition of The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Bill back in the studio. Dan has been here. Drew at the controls. And we have the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, on the phone with us from up in North Alabama, where Auburn will be taking on Troy there in Madison, the home of the Trash Pandas tonight. Always a fun place to be, and should be a huge Auburn crowd there tonight, Andy.
I expect there to be a big crowd for both of these teams. My guess is Troy will have a lot of folks here, but there's always a big Auburn crowd here. We know the alumni base
right
here in Huntsville. We were up here last spring for the Ambush Tour, and of the four places that we went, this was among the rowdiest of the Auburn crowds that we were in front of last year. So I expect that it's a beautiful night, too. I mean, it is a picture-perfect March night for baseball. No mention of rain and relatively warm for tonight's ball game.
That's great. Looking forward to that. As Dan said, want to get into some basketball as Auburn wrapped up a 24-7 season Saturday with another. And every win has been double digits. And Saturday, another one of those never trailed double-digit wins over the Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah, I talked with Cliff Ellis Monday, recording a Talking Tigers podcast that will air this Monday. And I didn't remember this. He certainly did. That 99 team, that SEC championship team,
mm-hmm.
with Chris Porter and Doc Robinson and Bryant and those guys, Bryant Smith and Damian Fishback and Scott Pullman, that team apparently averaged double-digit wins. Now, I don't know if it was a double-digit win in every game like it was for Auburn in every win this year, but I just didn't remember that aspect of the season.
Oh, they were a dominant team. I'm pretty sure they weren't all double digit though. That's something
that's remarkable.
Yeah,
to me.
It really is. And so this Auburn team now, I really think, Andy, playing its best basketball of the season, gets a couple of days to await the winner of Arkansas Vandy play, and then the winner of that game plays South Carolina, and that's who Auburn gets.
That's who Auburn gets around 2:30 on Friday. Our coverage will begin at 2:00, following the first game of the day. I won't be surprised if we see a team other than South Carolina in that game against her. I won't be surprised to see Arkansas.
No, nor would
in
I.
That game on Friday, because Arkansas has the talent. It's whether they can put it together. Now, what kind of effect is it on Arkansas after the gut-wrenching loss in overtime to Alabama? I mean, they're a dunk away from winning that game in regulation.
No question.
And whether it was a foul or not, if they make that dunk, that ball game's over.
Mm-hmm.
That game's over at that point. But, boy, you knew when that game got to overtime that Alabama, I thought, would find a way to win it, and it did. Vanderbilt comes in with some momentum. After its big upset against Florida,
mm-hmm.
on Saturday. But if it is not South Carolina against Auburn on Friday, I think it'll be Arkansas, just because of the talent level that team has. And Eric Musselman's teams have put it together in the postseason before. They're going to have to run the table this year to get to the
NCAA tournament.
I wouldn't be surprised if Arkansas is favored against South Carolina if those two teams were to play on Thursday, even though South Carolina is sitting there 25-6, perennially disrespected.
They're not going to get any respect, period.
All season long. But so Andy, I'm curious to know like where you've seen improvement with this team. We were talking about the way the shot selection has improved offensively from earlier in the season when that was one of the bigger criticisms to a game on Saturday where they shared the ball.
29 assists.
And so many of them coming from the post out to open shooters on the perimeter.
Well, and let's look at the last two games, for example. Because, he had 29 assists, which is the most in the Bruce Pearl era at Auburn. It's the most that we can find in the assist era, so to speak.
Right.
At Auburn. Now, listen, this is a team that has been at the top or in the top two in assists this year in the SEC all year long. So the fact that Auburn had a big assist day or night should not come as a surprise, in spite of the fact that Auburn had 29. But look at the second half, guys, last Tuesday, a week ago tonight, at Missouri. Now, granted, that's a team that went winless in the SEC this year. But that's a five-point game at halftime. And Bruce Pearl was not happy with the shot selection in that first half. And in the second half, Auburn shoots over 70% from the field and just pulls away at that point from Missouri in a place, regardless of talent, that has been a very, very tough place for Auburn to win. That's Auburn's most dominating win against Missouri in Columbia. But Auburn shot over 70% from the field and from three in the second half of that Missouri game. I think shot selection, I just think shot making has been better for Auburn. And perhaps if I think you can put a lot of that on Denver Jones.
Yes.
Right now. And I talked to Denver for the pregame show last Tuesday. And I just say, hey, what's up? What's the difference in your play of late? And I think it's confidence and the fact that he's just been more aggressive. He has looked more for his shot. And boy, does it pay off for Auburn with seven threes, which ties his career high. Even in his time at Florida International on Saturday. So I think his consistent emergence as a three-point shooter for Auburn has certainly helped the Tigers. I think that has been one of Auburn's improvements. And let's look back at that back-to-back losses against Alabama and Mississippi State. Auburn was just killed on the glass. I think Auburn's done a better job of keeping defensive their opponents off the offensive glass. It hasn't always happened, but I think Auburn's done a better job of that. You look at Auburn's two losses of late. They've come to Tennessee, which to me is the best team in this league, and Dalton Kinnick scored 39 that night, and there wasn't a whole lot that Auburn could do about that. And then a Kentucky team that may be playing better than anybody else in the SEC coming in. With the talent that John Calipari has there. So as disappointing as that Kentucky game was at home, and I'm not going to blame it on the loss of Jalen Williams in that game, but that certainly didn't help losing Jalen to the knee injury that he missed in the Georgia game and now has come back and looks just fine for the Tigers. I think two things. Yes, not only shot selection, the fact is Auburn just shooting the ball better. And Auburn's done a better job of keeping teams off the offensive glass.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Andy. Over the last 5 or 6 weeks, Auburn is either 1 or 2 in the SEC in both field goal and three-point percentage. Right. So that'll tell you, yes, they're definitely shooting it better, and that's what you want as you head here into the postseason. As we get short on time, Andy, give us a rundown of everything that is coming up back from spring break, and it's going to be a busy time.
Well, we've got Auburn baseball tonight on Wings 94.3 at 5:45, Auburn and Troy. Thursday night is the Tiger Talk, our guests, and we will be – this is a studio show. Mm-hmm. Our guests will include Butch Thompson, Bruce Pearl, Coach Jay, Mickey Dean, among the coaches that we'll talk to on Tiger Talk Thursday night. Then, of course, on Friday, Auburn baseball opens Southeastern Conference play at Vanderbilt. Brad Law will have the call at 5:45 from Nashville. Of course, that afternoon, Auburn men's basketball against either Arkansas Arkansas, Vanderbilt, or South Carolina in the quarterfinals of the SEC tournament. Tip off approximately 2:30. Our coverage will begin at 2 from Bridgestone Arena. Tigers make it into the semifinals and the finals. Both of those games will be at noon on Saturday and Sunday. And Auburn softball at home this weekend over on Weagle 91.1 FM as the Tigers host Texas A&M. Is that right? I think it's Texas A&M. I'm just off the top of my head right now. I think that's the correction.
I'm very impressed.
Softball's got Arkansas this weekend.
Arkansas this weekend. A&M comes here at some point.
Yeah, they will. Andy, it's always great to spend a little time with you. Really appreciate it. Have a great broadcast tonight and a safe trip back.
Guys, thank you very much. Have a great one.
Appreciate it, Andy. Great stuff.
Voice of the Tigers joining us as he does on Tuesdays. We'll get to our top of the hour break. Talk a little spring football practice and more when we come back for hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls in the second hour of the show, brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And we'd love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. We got a couple of cool things going on. Which one should I, you know what, Bill, you want to tell folks about our new buddies at Urban Walk? They're opening up this weekend.
Oh yeah, it's always great to welcome in some new additions to the Auburn Network's family. The Urban Walk's grand opening coming up in downtown Auburn this Saturday.
It's right across the street from the office. They're on Ramsey. They're right there from
the old office for me. From 11 to 2 this Saturday. And you can join Jacob Goins. He'll be live on location on 96.3 W Lee to promote the grand opening of the Urban Walk Fresh Global Fusion Stir Fry, giving away station T-shirts, Auburn Network gear with fun music, and great food. So come on out and walk your way.
Yeah, can't wait to check that out. I've heard some good things about Urban Walk, and yeah, Saturday the grand opening and Auburn Network will be on site.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. So love for you to join in. What did you talk about? I heard when I got in the car, I heard you running some of the
ran a little bit of Jaylen,
some of the audio.
Ran a little bit of Jaylen there in hour number one, talking about, you know, how his role has changed, and you know, it's sort of Jaylen's another one of those guys. Last week when we got to talk, I guess it was 2 weeks ago, when we got to talk with Luke Deal. And Luke was saying, he made an interesting point about the number of second year players that this Auburn team has, uh-huh, because Auburn went out and whatever the official number.
They had to about half the roster was turned over last year.
Yeah, whatever the official number was of guys who joined the team in Hugh Freeze's first year. Yeah, Auburn had over 40 guys, and a lot of those guys, not all of them, but a lot of those guys are back for a second year, mm-hmm, here at Auburn, and it's a very different offseason when you are returning after a year at a school as opposed to switching schools and, you know, going into the portal and trying to find a new situation. And, you know, to think that a lot of the guys who were in their first year last year could take a step forward, even though they'd already played college football and they'd already, it wasn't as though everything was brand new. But guys, you know, whether it's someone who had played major conference football like Peyton Thorne, who joined the team late, or someone like Jalen McLeod, who I think would be a great example of, you know, Jalen McLeod was having to adjust to switching teams and making the jump from the Sun Belt to the SEC.
And he wasn't healthy all year either.
And he talked about some of the differences between SEC football and Sun Belt football and where his game needed to change and what he's trying to improve on. I think it could be he's going to be a trendy pick as far as guys who could have a breakout season or an even bigger year in their second year. He's assumed. I asked him about, I don't know if he even ran this answer, but I asked him about sort of like where's the leadership coming from on the defense this year, because so many veterans have moved on. And he was talking about it's a lot of the players from last year, citing Jason Jones, Keldrick Falk, Eugene Asante, Keontae Scott himself. He also mentioned the Texas safety as someone who has stepped in immediately and taken a really vocal role.
Yeah, Jaron Thompson.
Jaron Thompson, who is somebody, I don't know, among all the transfers, I don't know how much.
Well, he's in a very experienced hand back there in the secondary.
And could be one of your starters at safety, depending on how things shake out this fall in the running.
Actually, Kane Lee was saying he's working at nickel, too.
Okay.
So he's working at nickel and safety.
There's going to be, nickel's going
to... And by the way, yes, Kane Lee is on the team, Ed.
Yes, Kane Lee is, to refute, well, not just Ed, other people have been wondering about
Ed's,
it, too.
Ed's the one that had asked about that. And, as we said, it was there was a report where I'm sure the person writing had just got his names confused. But we had seen Kane Lee, and we knew he was on the roster. Well, today... he was one of the players that we had a chance to talk to, and I've got some audio from Kay and Lee that sometime when we have an opportunity we can run.
Yeah, we have proof of life from Kay and Lee earlier today as he is still on the team and talking about what kind of role he could have.
Right, he's expected. He's expecting to be a starter at corner.
You think Keontae and Kane Lee could be your starting outside corners?
I think right
corners?
Now those would be your starters.
And then it's a matter of who's...
Exactly
who's...
how they fit the other pieces. Jaron Thompson, I think, is going to be a starter. I think that Caleb Wooden's probably going to be a starter.
Could Champ Anthony compete at
Champ
the nickel
Anthony
spot?
Champ Anthony very much could, and then Jaron Thompson could move out to the safety spot
with Wooden.
That's
a nice first five right mm-hmm. there with the amount of experience Wooden got, and then you've also got J.D. Rim. You've also got I know J.C.
Well,
Hart.
You've got Sylvester Smith, Terrence Scott, J.C. Hart, and Antonio Kite.
I was going to say Kite
that,
from
that
Alabama.
That are all guys that are. Redshirt freshman, if you will.
And Antonio Kite's played a little bit of football as well, but he's somebody who, I guess
he played enough where he would just be a sophomore after his freshman year last year at Alabama.
Right, but looking to fit in somewhere in that mm-hmm. mix as well. So, no, I think that's you have experienced options. You have some less experienced options, but still some competition there. I think that's and I don't know where the depth chart has it right now, but maybe your first five at the moment looking like in the secondary, Keontae Scott and Kay and Lee at corner, Champ Anthony at nickel and Thompson and Wooden at safety. Like that would be,
that's a possibility.
Let me ask you this. If Thompson's the starting nickel, who would your safeties be? Would it be Wooden and?
Could be Wooden and Laquan Robinson.
Okay. Laquan Robinson.
The junior college All-American.
Yeah. That's another name that people sometimes forget would be. Just mentioning that Thompson's been playing some nickel makes you wonder, like, well, who could be? Who
well,
could
I
be
think I think the... when you bring in a guy that was, rated by some as the top safety prospect in junior college, he'll probably get a long look too. So I didn't get a chance to watch as much of the secondary.
He's not coming to watch.
Probably not. I saw some of the defensive line. I watched a little of the offensive line. Did want to mention the star today. You heard a little comment a while ago, and you mentioned about it, but I mean. Three different players today commented on Percy Lewis, who we also had a chance to talk to. I've got some Percy Lewis audio we can run. But every one of the players that mentioned Percy Lewis, besides they all sort of had the same look. I don't know. Jeremiah Wright maybe didn't have quite the same look of astonishment, but Jeremiah Wright said he's never seen a guy that big that can move his feet so quickly. All of the players that mentioned Percy Lewis commented on his athleticism along with his size. And he is a huge young man.
And what's remarkable, Bill, is that you go back to Gus, right? I mean, the last 5, 8, 10 years of Auburn football, hasn't a common refrain been, okay, the offensive tackles, while quality football players, are maybe miscast as tackles? Like, we'd heard that about previous Auburn teams, right?
Yeah.
Oh, they were, maybe you have converted guards playing tackle, or you have guys that would, it's a question mark. Percy Lewis and Tuttle are physically.
They look like SEC offensive
they
tackles.
They certainly don't seem
they
to be.
They look like NFL offensive
they
tackles.
They don't seem to be miscast as
no.
They're not converted guards or anything. Now, look, on a great team, could they slide in and be your guards? I mean, Brian Kelly's a big fan of having five tackles on his offensive line, and figuring out teaching tackles to play guard and center versus leaning on guys who necessarily project as guards or centers. But these two, And there's competition, but at the moment it feels like Lewis and Tutol.
Oh, I think those are your starting tackles because behind them you have youngsters. You've got guys like Tyler Johnson and Seth Wilfred, the junior college transfer. I think those are the guys that could line up behind them. The most interesting thing to watch now, along with Percy Lewis, is Dylan Wade moving into guard.
There was another name mentioned, right? By you mentioned Jeremiah Wright, talked about a local guy.
He said E.J. Harris. When he was asked about young players, he said E.J. Harris continues to improve. He said he reminds him a lot of himself. Sometimes he's a little overly aggressive, but the talent is just really, really there. And so it's nice to hear about the Auburn high product.
Sometimes it takes a couple of years for a guy, especially on the
offensive line,
especially at the line of scrimmage. I mean, we've seen that before, mm-hmm. where Auburn players there are countless examples of he was waiting his turn for 3 or 4 years and then got on the field and excelled. I mean, Cam Stutz had a career sort of like that.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Cam Stutz, who just graduated.
Stutz was around 4 years, I guess, until before he really got his shot.
As a guy, people were saying, you know, we have older, bigger options right now, but the moment it's his turn, he's going to run with it. I get that feeling from E.J. Harris, and it might not be this year, but the moment that, you know, things sort of, you know, the path is clear.
Yeah, when an opportunity arises, when something opens up.
I don't know if the coaching staff is going to view it as, oh, we need to urgently find someone else. I think they're going to say, like, let's take a good long look at what E.J. Harris, a guy who's been working for years for his opportunity, could provide the team. And for people who remember E.J. from his time at Auburn High, I'm sure that'd be a very exciting moment when it comes.
Oh, yeah. As far as offensively, just while I was over there, and I left a little before it was done, just to get back and to have an opportunity to chat with Andy a little bit. But the rotation was still the same at quarterback. Hank Brown looked – all right, you remember there were some comments about how accurate he was. But I had said, and I'm sure it didn't have anything to do with what I said, but I said he may not have the strongest arm, but he was really accurate. Today, looked like he was really loading up to show the strength of his arm. And he had a couple of passes that looked like, you know, ease back a little bit, Hank. I think maybe he wanted to prove that it's not just accuracy. He's not a lightweight as far as arm strength, because he was really bringing the heat today. But, yeah, it was pretty much the same. It was still the same rotation with Peyton Thorne, then Holden, then Hank Brown, and then Walker White in that order. And they were throwing initially to running backs, and it was Thorne to Jarquez, Holden to Damari Alston, Hank Brown to Brian Battee, and Walker White to Jeremiah Cobb. So that's the way the order was going there. The receivers, they were about ready to go.
That's a talented running back room.
Oh, that really
is. You forget really about it until you hear all the names at once. And, I mean, the thought of – I mean, those are four guys.
The guy that – I mean, just fourth in taking reps today, Jeremiah Cobb, is plenty good enough to play for any team.
Those are four guys that would fit as the starter or the backup for a Power Five running back.
Absolutely.
And you've got four. Now we'll see if Auburn keeps all four of them going into the season. Here's hoping. They all seem pretty bought in and excited about the opportunity. And
we thought Brian Battee was gone and he decided to stick around.
Yeah, so you've got between Hunter and Battee and Cobb and Damari Alston, like I'm really interested to see how that all shakes out.
334-321-1390. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise. Don't forget, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we should have Jake Crane of Crane & Company. So we've got another segment where we can take your calls here on the Tuesday Drive.
If you truly care about your feet.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 18 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody doing well. Let's see. Well, I see from a couple of reports that after I left, folks got to see the secondary. The first secondary that was out there did indeed include Jaron Thompson and Caleb Wooden at the safeties. The It doesn't say who the nickel was, just said the corners were Kay and Lee and Antonio Kite out there with the first unit today. Maybe Keontae, maybe they were going with because it's Keontae was out there when I was watching them go through the warmups. Maybe somebody saw those two and thought they were the corners. Unless Keontae's moved back to nickel, because I think Keontae would have been with your first bunch, which, too, and he didn't look like he was hurt.
Which seems like it would be a surprise just because, you know, when Keontae was talking about returning to college football,
to prove himself as a corner.
But how much of that was out of necessity because Auburn was losing outside corners DJ James and Nehemiah Pritchett? And if Auburn has corners on the outside, I don't know.
I don't know. I think Keontae wants to play corner this year.
And I think Auburn wants him out there somewhere. Yeah. I'll tell you what, it would be surprising if Auburn finds two outside corners. Like, not ruling it out, but if Auburn of this group decides there are two outside corners that give them a better shot than Keontae Scott, it would be a surprising development. Wouldn't rule it out. Keontae, and if that happens, look, the nickel has become such an important position.
He was
in college football
tremendously valuable last year at the nickel.
If you're a defense and that's a weakness, you're in huge trouble.
Oh yeah,
because teams will run at you, teams will throw at you, and teams will use that to pick apart other parts of your defense. So yeah, Auburn wants to be as strong as possible there. I do wonder where Keontae Scott.
I left a little early. I didn't expect, you know, that to be the first thing that I read was that Keontae wasn't listed there among the starters, but they only listed four DBs. I'm wondering if one of those guys maybe was a nickel and Keontae was out there.
I would keep Keontae as the number one outside corner on the Bill Cameron depth chart until we have really good information otherwise.
All right, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and we'll get to it. And Robert is up first. Hey, Robert.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Pretty good.
Good to hear from you.
Dan, you mentioned somebody from my past, Barry McKnight. I got a Barry McKnight story for you.
Let's hear it. That's always great. What a just great guy Barry is.
Oh, listen, he was the most professional announcer I'd ever heard, you know, and this was in the early 90s. This was a long time ago. My son played baseball at Tallahassee, and Barry was the play-by-play for us. This was early 90s, maybe a little bit toward the mid-90s. And he would walk into the press box, and all the Tallahassee folks were country bumpkins, would have our jeans and flip-flops and just an old pullover shirt. And he'd walk in with his penny loafers and khakis and all that kind of stuff. And this, now remember, this is early 90s. And he had a briefcase. You know, nobody we knew carried a briefcase. And he had his briefcase and just very professional. And then one day, the briefcase started ringing, and we all looked around like, what in the world is this? This is something's ringing in his briefcase. He had a cell phone. We had hardly even known what a cell phone was back then. And he had a cell phone, but he was just so professional, so good. But we had a good time. He was just not a Tallahassee person. You know what I'm saying?
Was he doing the games on radio or just doing them there?
No, he was doing the games on radio.
On TLS or Power 99?
TLS.
Okay.
TLS. And this was a long, long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but he was just excellent. But, you know, he was just so professional, and we weren't used to professional people. And
we still aren't.
He came in with all of his stuff, but listen, he did a great, great job for us. He really did. I kept the books. That's why I was in the press box.
Barry has been, Barry's been a friend for a long time, and he's been so helpful since I joined the Troy Sports Radio Network. It's really hard not to try to impersonate him and just do it the way he does it, because he does such a great job. A couple years ago, I sort of got the idea that, like, Barry's going to be Johnny Carson, and you can't try to, but you got to do something different. You got to be Letterman. You got to be somebody else, you know, he is the gold standard.
He was so funny. And so professional.
And for folks who have never met him, he is, and you hear this sometimes, but it's absolutely true, Barry.
Man, Barry's the golden boy with the golden throat.
As good a broadcaster as he is, he's an even better person.
Yeah,
and so
really
it's a pleasure.
It was great to work with. And then he started calling, you know, for Troy. And I said, oh, I know him. He's famous. I know him. So it was real fun to hear about him again.
And he's done such a great job. Continues to do a great job with Troy. He'll be there in the house tonight in Rocket City. So if you're going if you're going to the game tonight in Madison, check the press box for our guy Barry McKnight. Maybe give him a thumbs up.
It'll be too much of a drive for me, but if you see him, just tell him I appreciated working with him.
Absolutely, we'll do. Great stuff, Robert.
All right, thank you. Y'all have a good day.
Good hearing from you, Robert. Yep.
Thanks,
I've known Barry probably longer than he would want to admit. I hired Barry at the old WAD back in the 80s.
Also, Jeopardy champion. Barry McKnight, a former. Now, what's the deal? Are you a Jeopardy champion forever, right? You're not a former Jeopardy.
I would guess.
You're either the reigning Jeopardy champion or a Jeopardy champion, I think is the way that works. And Barry McKnight is a Jeopardy champion in his past, one of a couple that I've met in my travels.
334-321-1390. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, basketball tournament action is underway at some places. The SEC tournament gets underway tomorrow.
You had a tournament champion crowned yesterday, a couple of them actually, that I think will be trendy NCAA tournament teams. James Madison wins the Sun Belt down in Pensacola, 31-3. And as a D1 team this year, they went and beat Michigan State on the road early in the season to jump into the top 25. Lost both regular season games to App State, but then didn't have to play App State in the Sun Belt tournament. Bill, App State got beat by somebody else, and JMU eliminates Arkansas State in the final for the championship at JMU. And then Buckyball, Samford. Like that's a Samford team that is in the NCAA
tournament.
Oh,
that's a team you don't want to play.
Yeah, that's
and I would expect the NCAA to put them in a region with either Alabama or Auburn
to set up
to have those as a possible matchup.
And where the teams are on the line right now, a four seed could be seeing the Samford Bulldogs in the. I think James, you know what, James Madison and Samford are both possibilities on the 12-13 line. I think there's also the chance that you could have a play-in game on the 12 line. A couple of projections have the winner of one of the games in Dayton going to the 12 line. The tournament committee can sort of set that up, but Auburn could have depends on what happens, but Auburn on the 4 line or the 5 line could have one of these popular Cinderellas waiting for them in the first round. So could Alabama.
Yeah, I agree.
In fact, I think I wouldn't be surprised if those two teams, because of the way these things work, those two teams I just mentioned, James Madison and Samford, could be the opponents for Alabama and Auburn in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Because JMU is looking like a 13 or a 12, and Samford's right on that same line too. And I wouldn't be surprised.
And they're both scary teams.
They're both really good. They're both dangerous teams for a round one matchup.
334-321-1390. Like I said, the SEC tournament gets underway tomorrow. I believe game one is the game that will eventually lead into Auburn's opponent. Arkansas and Vandy will play, and of course the winner there gets South Carolina, and then the winner of that ball game is who Auburn plays. The other game, Georgia and Missouri tomorrow, that is the second game on the schedule tomorrow in the SEC, opening day of the SEC tournament.
Yeah, what are you thinking about Vandy, Arkansas? Is it? I mean, it's tough. It's just tough to back Vandy.
Yeah, it really
is. They could do it. And you know what? If Vandy beats Arkansas, I bet Vandy gives South Carolina a game.
Oh, I bet they will. Okay. I think the Arkansas Vandy winner is going to be difficult for South Carolina. But again, like we were saying, South Carolina doesn't get any respect. They have the best record in the SEC. They were, you know, very very close to winning the SEC regular season outright, and they still. I don't think there's anybody expects them to make a deep run in either the SEC tournament or the Big Dance.
In the bracket update that Joe Lunardi released earlier today for ESPN.com, he's got Mississippi State as one of the last four teams out of the play-in game. He's got them in as one of the last four byes. He's got Texas A&M as the first team out right now. So Texas A&M could be a team. And by the way, that's a familiar place for Texas A&M going into SEC tournament time. And here they are.
But hey, if that's the case, they're getting more respect going into the SEC tournament this time than they did last time.
And if that's the case, maybe a win or two gets them in, even if they...
That's the only place that I've seen that. No, I haven't seen anybody else really giving to A&M much of a chance.
Fox's guy has them in the play-in game right now, and Joe Lenardi has them.
How many SEC teams do those guys have in there?
Lenardi has...
He has A&M in and State not?
No. He has State in. He has State...
State in the play-in? Okay.
State just on the right side of the play-in. So he's got State as the last team not getting a play-in game, but like they're the last... The bottom.
That's the seventh SEC team. Then.
Yes, and then A&M would be eight if A&M were to get in.
I couldn't imagine A&M being, as a play-in and State not being in. So that does make sense.
Lenardi's got Auburn as a four seed in the Midwest region playing Charleston in the first round. He's got Florida as a seven seed playing Michigan State in that same region. He's got Tennessee as the fourth one seed. That's a big thing to watch this week, Tennessee and North Carolina. I think Arizona blew it with the loss to USC over the weekend. I think it's Tennessee versus North Carolina. Winner of that, if both teams win their conference tournaments, I think Tennessee is gonna edge North Carolina out, but I think if Tennessee doesn't win the SEC tournament and North Carolina wins the ACC tournament, they could find themselves on the North Carolina could play their way into the one, and Tennessee could drop down to the two line. Lenardi's got Mississippi State as an 11, their one spot out of the play-in games. He's got Kentucky as a 3. He's got South Carolina as a 5. He's got Alabama as a 4, and he's got, I think that's that. Yeah, those are all the SEC teams in the mix with, and he's got them spread all over. Auburn, Lenardi's got Auburn playing in Spokane, Washington in the first round of the first weekend of the NCAA tournament.
Huh. It's going to be interesting. I love this time of year now as we're getting into postseason tournaments. You're going to see, it's hardly ever does everything just follow. I mean, does your regular season champ go ahead and win the tournament? You're going to have a couple of teams that were feeling like they're going to be in the NCAA tournament get knocked out because of a surprise winner of a conference tournament here or there. I mean, it just always happens.
Another familiar name that could be waiting for Auburn on the 12-13 line. We were just talking about Samford, talking about James Madison.
Uh-huh.
Charleston is the team that Joe Lenardi's got Auburn playing in the first run right now. Grand Canyon is on that 12-13 line. Bryce Drew, in his fourth season, former Vanderbilt head coach, brother of the coach down at Baylor, Scott. Drew. Bryce Drew is their dad was a coach, right? Valparaiso.
Oh yeah,
their dad was a coach for a long time. Bryce Drew is the head coach at Grand Canyon. He's got them playing high quality basketball, the Antelopes out of Arizona, and they could be another opponent for a team like Auburn or Alabama in the first round.
I know we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll go ahead and roll the music as I update something, because I saw a couple of other notes. Our buddy Nathan King pointing out that Keontae Scott was not out there when they were doing the 7-on-7 or 11-on-11, so that would explain why you didn't see him at one of the corners today. Hopefully he'll be back very quickly. All right, Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us when we come back on the other side. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and it's time where we welcome in our good friend from Crane & Company, and that's Jake Crane. Jake, how you doing today?
Man, doing great, Bill. Just March Madness, it's already overtaking me. I'm in there watching New Hampshire play Vermont on pins and needles.
We've got it. Yeah, we've got it on right here. I was talking
East,
about it, man.
America
it's,
East, baby.
It's great. I love it. I mean, it's just basketball out.
Yeah, I need that under at 132 to hit. That's what I need.
All right, well, for entertainment purposes only, of course.
We're not watching it quite that closely.
For entertainment, he's got a lot of doll hairs on this one. So Jake, we were talking about some of the teams that could be trendy Cinderellas when the bracket is released on Sunday. James Madison punched their ticket, winning the Sun Belt yesterday. Samford is a team that's gotten a lot of buzz here locally with Bucky Ball. Bryce Drew, the coach there at Grand Canyon, could have a team on the 12-13 line. Is there a team that projects as a 10 seed or worse in this tournament that you sort of like the moxie? You think they got the juice?
Man, Drake's really interesting. It feels like they've got like all the ingredients in the recipe to kind of make a run in March. The coach's son's the best player. They've got a big that's pretty good. Everybody can shoot. They play really good defense. You look at them. You look at Grand Canyon is another very interesting team. They can really fill it up. You know, the question becomes, what are the teams that can win maybe a first round game in an upset, but maybe not necessarily make a run further in the tournament, as opposed to the teams that could really make a run further in the tournament? You know, I don't know what USF's going to be, but they're very, very interesting when you look at the way that team's made up. So, look, I mean, college basketball right now, the parity is at an all-time high. I mean, who knows? We may have four schools that are named after saints in the Final Four.
And you know what? If Indiana State gets in, and they should get in, it would be disappointing if Indiana State were left out. Indiana State is a team. There's a great Athletic article from earlier this year about the story of Indiana State's coach, who was a tennis prodigy thrown out of his house as a teenager because he didn't want to play anymore, and his dad wasn't going to keep him around. And he's gone from that to the basketball coach of the coach of the most efficient offense in college basketball here at Indiana State. That's a fun team that could. They could make some noise. They hit shots.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, Indiana State's been a team that you feel like should have gotten that large bid for a while now. You know, Avila, the way that team's built, you know, I think there's one of those teams that everybody can get attached to. You look at the story of that guy. I mean, I didn't know, like, Andy, you know, Pete Sampras was dead or anything. But at the end of the day, they've got a team that can make a run for sure.
Talking with Jake Crane from Crane & Company here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive, and the SEC tournament's coming up in Nashville, a town you know a little bit about.
Yeah, look, the SEC this year, I mean, it's been so, you know, paradoxical. I hate to keep using that word, but it's the truth. I mean, who knows who's going to end up winning the tournament? A lot of people have Tennessee and Kentucky in the final, which probably means that Tennessee and Kentucky, one of them will not be in the final. It's a who's who. I mean, you've got, you know, a team like, you know, you look at Mississippi State, you look at Auburn, obviously, you look at South Carolina. I thought Auburn got a pretty good draw.
Yeah, I think so too.
So I mean, we'll see. I'm excited to go see it, obviously being right in our backyard here. But, you know, I love the argument, Bill, of is it better for a team to go early, to get out early of the conference tournament and be able to rest for the NCAA tournament? But then you look at Auburn, I mean, you get a double bye, so you get rest anyway. It's only three games, so, I mean, look, go get it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and you look at, really, Bruce, in postseason, it's either deep runs or quick outs.
Yeah, if Bruce Pearl has a team that goes home really early in the SEC tournament and then makes a long run in the NCAAs, then it will feel possible.
Right.
That hasn't happened yet at Auburn.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be honest. I think College Game Day did Auburn a huge favor when they were at the, I believe it was Duke, North Carolina, saying that Auburn is overvalued. You heard the players talking about that in the post-game press conference for Georgia. I'm just telling you right now, this Auburn team, they may not have the Jabari Smith Jr. superstar, but this team is built, I think, to actually make a run in March. They've got a little bit of everything.
Well, they have really shot the ball better lately. We were talking with Andy Burcham in the first hour. And you know, you look over the last 5 or 6 weeks, Auburn has been either number one or two in the SEC in both field goal and three-point shooting percentage. They have really picked it up. I mean, you've seen, you know, just teams, Georgia. Georgia, for some brilliant reason, decided to continue trying to double and triple Jani Broome, so to leave Denver Jones wide open. And you'd figure after he hit three or four threes, maybe they'd change, but they didn't. But, I mean, Auburn has shot it better from the outside. Aiden Holloway has played even better down the stretch. That's where they have to, that, you know, that's where they really have to continue to improve is there on the perimeter and with the guard play. They don't turn it over an awful lot. They just need to continue to be able to create and score some from the outside to take that focus, completely off Janai and Jalen.
Yeah, well, Bill, doesn't it feel like this Auburn team actually runs offense more than any team I can really remember in the past?
Under Bruce, I believe it.
It seems like the ball doesn't get stuck as much. You know, Wendell Green isn't coming down and just shooting a three from half court, you know, half the time. It seems like they actually run offensive sets really, really well. But the biggest question for me is, and I will always defer to Bruce Pearl, obviously, in what goes on, but the rotation. Like, I love Chris Moore, right? I love his passion. He's an Auburn guy, but he doesn't really need to be out there that much in the NCAA tournament. I know Lior's hurt, but I'm interested to see how the rotation maybe trims down. You got and Auburn's depth is one of their strengths. I'm not saying that you change everything, but at the end of the day, the best player's got to be on the floor in March. I mean, and I know Bruce Pearl knows that. I just think Auburn is so deep that you could get away with doing that for longer than we've seen in the past.
Well, maybe that's some of the reason too. I think you're right to an extent, Jake. I would think that maybe part of the reason that you saw the reserves as much as you did in the regular season was because Bruce didn't want to overextend players like Janai and Jalen, and I would throw Chad Baker Mazzara into that mix now. Yeah. And so when we get into win or go home basketball, maybe the minutes change a little bit and things tighten up at the top. I still think there's a role. Chris Moore is one of those classic, a lot of what he does doesn't necessarily show up in the box score beyond plus minus because of what he's doing without the ball and what he's doing defensively. But at the same time, you can't play shorthanded offensively. You got to have guys that can threaten, and that's either going to mean Chris Moore is going to have to take and make shots when he's in the game, or there's going to have to be an adjustment to who's getting minutes.
Yeah, and again, I don't want to turn this into a, Chris Moore is a bad basketball player session, but he does do a great job communicating. You've heard Bruce Pearl talk about that. But if Chris Moore is taking a ton of the minutes, it's just that makes it easier to defend Auburn. Let's just be honest. I mean, I think Auburn's strength from a roster standpoint is their versatility, especially with the way Chaney Johnson's come on. I mean, you put Chaney Johnson out there, and I think he's going to be a star next year. But you look at this front court and Auburn's ability to just be huge and also shoot the ball well, that's what's going to get you there in March. So I'm very interested to see how Bruce Pearl plays this thing. And, yeah, you're exactly right. I think Chris Moore's greatest contribution to Auburn is he's eaten a lot of minutes so that some of these other guys can get a rest. Now's the time to press the gas. If there was ever a time to put the pedal to the floor and scream America, it's right now.
And then the guy that we haven't mentioned, CBM. I mean, Chad Baker Mazzara, since he's been inserted into the starting lineup, the offense has just taken a step forward. He didn't have a great game against Georgia, but he didn't need to. But he's a guy that can do so many things to help you win offensively and defensively.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a vocal leader that actually produces on the court, which is something that Bruce Pearl's been clamoring for, and he just hits weird shots.
Yeah.
Like, if you've ever watched the NCAA tournament, the teams that make a run, there's always that guy that just hits weird shots. That's Chad Baker Mazzara. He's a matchup problem. I'm just so glad that Jalen Williams is healthy, because I think what you're going to see is people kind of get lulled to sleep in the regular season because you're on the road and then you're at home. You're on the road and then you're at home. What travels in basketball? Well, it's the same thing that travels in football. It's defense and not turning the ball over. And then you look at rebounding. Janai Broome, I think, is as fresh as any big man in the country. And the fact that he didn't get Defensive Player of the Year in the SEC is a borderline criminal act. I like Zakai Ziegler. He should have got Comeback Player of the Year. But I think Janai Broome, that mixture, with him being able to be aggressive because he knows Dylan Cardwell can come in if he gets in foul trouble, plus Jalen Williams at the four, plus Chaney Johnson at the four, Auburn's front court's as good as anybody in the country. I will die on that hill.
And Janai is someone who we were talking about it yesterday, Jake. The improvements to his game from when he arrived at Auburn to now. I mean, when he got to Auburn to replace Walker Kessler, he was a very aggressive shot blocker. He was a rim runner. He had some offensive game around the basket. But where he's improved, it's a reminder that it's not just about recruiting in college basketball. There's also a lot of development that goes into it, even at the superpowers, even at the blue bloods. And to see Janai improve as a perimeter scorer, as a passer, he's dramatically better as a passer. He is his ability to defend away from the basket. He's not just looking for block shots anymore. I mean, his transformation into a guy who is a do-it-all, all-conference post has been really something to see.
Well, I think the SEC has benefited Janai Broome a lot from a physicality standpoint. He doesn't have to trick people to be able to score. He doesn't have to have a bunch of different moves to be able to go in there and get the ball to the spot where he wants to get it. I think it's been one of the great examples of where you play determines how well you improve. I think the SEC's done a lot for Janai Broome. That outside shot's been huge. You know, him, and I know the free throw line is still a little bit of a problem for him, but, I mean, Auburn's ability, think about this. In the front court, Janai Broome can shoot the three. Jalen Williams can shoot the three. Chaney Johnson can shoot the three. What does that do? It opens up driving lanes for Auburn, and that has been huge for the guard play. For a guy like Chad Baker-Mazzara, you just brought up, at the three, Auburn's ability to go five out, Auburn's ability to be able to stretch you thin, and then who are you going to double? Like, that's fine. You want to double Janai Broome? Jalen Williams is going to kill you. He's going to kill you in real time. You don't want to double Janai Broome? Janai Broome's going to kill you. Like, it just, the less options you have defensively, and I'm speaking from a defensive coach standpoint, the less options I have defensively, the more you're going to absolutely slice and dice me, and I think that's where Auburn's really taking advantage.
There's not a gimmicky way to defend this team right now. You need to play them straight up, and you need to win your matchups. And there might look the best teams in college basketball. I think right now Auburn has the ninth best Final Four odds of anybody on the board. The best teams in college basketball could very well be able to do that, but I think a lot of teams are going to struggle to play Auburn that way and consistently win.
Well, who are the teams that are able to move through the NCAA tournament in any postseason single elimination format? It's the teams that can win in the most ways. I feel like this Auburn team can win in the most ways. They can win a shootout if they have to. They can win a rock fight if they have to. They can win a free throw shooting contest if they have to. I love Auburn's ability to be able to beat you when they're not at their strength. Because when you have to win six games to win a national championship, there's going to be one or two games where the shots just aren't falling. How can you respond? That's why I think Alabama's biggest problem is, if they don't shoot well, they're going
to
lose.
Yep. You got to be able to go to plan B and plan C and feel good about your chances doing that. And so other teams in college basketball, they don't have they don't have the backup options the way that it seems like at the moment Auburn and some of the other best teams in college basketball do. How do you feel about the chances? I mean, we'll have the tournament bracket the next time we talk to you, Jake, which jazzes me up to get to say that. But of the other teams in the SEC, Tennessee's in the hunt for a one seed. Kentucky has improved as much as anyone in college basketball over the last 6-8 weeks. Alabama is still a very dangerous offense. A lot of folks like Florida. What do you think of who could make some noise in the SEC tournament? And then is there an SEC team or two you really like when we get the draw on Sunday?
Yeah, well, look, from an NCAA tournament standpoint, I think this is Tennessee's best chance. I think mm-hmm. Dalton Connect is changed them, right? When they've gotten bounced out of the NCAA tournament, it's because they've gone through these scoring ruts and nobody can go get them a bucket. They've been having to rely on Vescovi or somebody that can score it every now and then when they have to, but it makes it a lot easier to defend. Defending Dalton Connect, I mean, good luck with that. And that has opened up him and Adu coming along the way they have. I think, has changed Tennessee. I expect a deep run. I think they should be a one seed. If Kentucky just plays decent defense, they're so good offensively that they could definitely make a run. Florida, to me, though, if we're going to pick a sleeper, the two sleepers I'm looking at is Florida, number one, because they do have everything. They have old guards. They have length. Defensively, they're starting to figure it out. I know they just lost to Vanderbilt, but in a weird way, I think that may be the best thing that could have possibly happened to them. And then I tell you another team that's on the periphery. If Texas A&M gets in, if they find a way to make a run in the SEC tournament and they get in the NCAA tournament, I think they're going to be a problem with Wade Matthews and Boots Relaford and Coleman and Garcia and some of the guys that they have. Outside of that, you know, Bama, I just feel like they're a one-trick pony. It's a hell of a trick, but I just feel like they're a one-trick pony. Mississippi State, I don't think they can score enough to be able to make a run. But I tell you what, man, the SEC, they've improved so much from a basketball standpoint. You just seen a couple teams to really go deep in March to solidify what we've all been seeing.
Yeah, it is a fun time of the year, and you do a great job of it there at Crane and Company. Let folks know if they haven't if they haven't already got it locked in, how they can access it, and what you got coming up.
Yeah, well, look, if we go live each weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. to 8 a.m. Central. You can find us on YouTube or on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Daily Wire, all that stuff. We're talking a ton of college basketball, talking spring football. Obviously, the craziness of the NFL free agency. It's Crain and Company. You know, from Auburn, went to Oblaga High School. If you like to support local stuff, come hang out with us.
Appreciate it. Great stuff, as always,
Jake. It's gonna be Fury Road next week, Jake. I can't wait. It's gonna be.
Oh God, I can't wait. Yeah, either. Who's staying in the tank with Brad Pitt? Let's all make a decision.
Strap the guy with the guitar to the back of the truck, Jake, because we're going on Fury Road next week.
Hey, I'm so down, man. Great talk to y'all.
All right, take care, man. We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
This is Zach Alsobrook with.